Coming up on Golf Today, Pebble Beach is the place to be this week. Big names, signature event, the return of Scotty as the PGA Tour season ramps up. And Harris English ramped up his game to win at Torrey Pines. We'll chat with the five-time PGA Tour winner about his victory and his goals for the rest of the season. Plus, Chicago Bears legend Brian Urlacher joins us from Orlando ahead of the LPGA season opener. We'll ask him about the transition from football to golf and who's going to win the big game. It's all happening on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
13-time PGA Tour winner, three-time major champ, Jordan Spieth on the range at Pebble where he won in 2017. One of the game's most compelling figures, one day away from his return to the PGA Tour. He's been injured, about to make his first start of 2025. What a sight for sore eyes if you love this game. Us, maybe not so much a sight for sore eyes. Damon Hack alongside Amy Lynch. Great to be with you on this Wednesday. We appreciate you joining us. And how about that? A guy who carried the sport in 2015. And even when he wasn't winning, Jordan Spieth hits different, Amy Lynch.
Yeah, he's got to be one of the most compelling figures in the game. Even from the neck up, if you just listen to him and his caddy kind of rationalize and analyze every shot that they're taking. And there have to be reasonably low expectations. He hasn't played competitively in 5 months,
right,
coming off the surgery on his left wrist. So there have to be low expectations this week, but the anticipation is always high with this guy. I mean, this is the golf course where he was dangling off the cliff on the eighth hole a few years ago, debating whether or not to play that iron shot, which of course he did in the end.
And it's a signature event designed to bring the best players in the world together. An important week in that regard. Scotty, Spieth. I mean, this is what, apparently, it's what the fans want to see.
It is, and it's worth noting that Jordan Spieth is there on a sponsor's exemption as well this week, which does speak to the narrowing of pathways at the very top of this game, because certainly Jordan Spieth is on any fans list of a guy that you want to see there. Mm. But competitively, Jordan Spieth has not played his way into that field, and that's going to be a recurring narrative as the year wears on. Jordan is not qualified for these signature events until he starts playing at a level that's going to get him into those events. But he's not there yet. This is a good week to start.
Well, from the guy who carried the sport a decade ago to the guy who is carrying it now, the big story of the week, Scottie Scheffler, the world number one. 2024 FedEx Cup champ makes his season debut and first start since hand surgery after puncturing his right hand with broken glass on Christmas. Won his last competitive start at the 2024 Hero World Challenge. Now, despite starting his season later than planned, here is what the odds makers are predicting: more of the same. 4-1, the odds via DraftKings. Rory at 12-1, JT at 14-1, on and on we go. The UCLA Bruin, Patrick Cantlay, 18-1, Sungjae Im at 25-1. With more on Scotty, we welcome in Todd Lewis from Pebble Beach. You've been watching Scotty at Pebble these last couple of days. Does he have the same mojo from your perspective?
Well, for my eye test, Damon, a simple answer is yes. I've watched him on the range hit balls behind me. I watched him on Pebble Beach yesterday when he played an 18-hole practice round, and he does not look like he has missed a step from 2024. He just started hitting golf balls last week, and he landed here on the Monterey Peninsula Sunday evening. On Monday, he went out and played just a fun, casual round at Cypress Point, which is a prestigious golf course here on the peninsula. He was 6-under through his first six holes. He cooled down after that, and he shot a 63 on that Monday. And he came out yesterday, as I mentioned, played an 18-hole practice round here at Pebble Beach. A little more intensity in that practice round, but still hitting a lot of great shots. And I asked him after that round where he is with his hand heading into competition.
Feels good. Yeah, everything's feeling good, progressing nicely. Playing pain-free golf, so everything's good.
Let's go back to the incident. When it happened and you saw all the damage that was on your right hand, was there any fear that this may affect you long term?
I think, you know, when stuff like that happens in the moment, I think fear is usually the first thing that your mind goes to. So you think all kinds of crazy thoughts. But, was able to get home the next day, which we were planning on doing anyways, and get the proper treatment and get surgery the day after that. And so, got things handled pretty quickly and had a good idea of the timeline, so it wasn't too stressful for too long.
Was it difficult to be patient as you watched your peers compete out on the PGA Tour and you weren't out here?
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously a bit frustrated sitting at home, but at the end of the day, you know, we had some good time at home, some extra rest that I definitely didn't anticipate to start the year. But overall, you know, we had a nice time, and, you know, it's pretty pretty rare for us to have uninterrupted time at home where I can't go out and really do anything. So it was, in a way, it was good, but at the same time, it was definitely a bit frustrating to be sitting around.
You're starting your season off here at Pebble. It's a signature event. I know you would like to add this to your resume, which is already impressive. What is so special about this venue here?
I mean, it's just a special place to play golf. I mean, the views, and I think the golf course is fantastic, and hopefully the rain holds off this week and the course continues to firm up, and it should be a fun test. I think it's a great golf course, you know, the small greens with a lot of slope. You really got to plot your way around and hit a lot of quality shots.
I do want to ask you, as we start the new season, you coming off this incredible 2024, you led in so many statistical categories on the PGA Tour. Are there things you want to improve this season? If so, what?
Yeah, I think always you can get tougher mentally. I can continue to hit more shots and play more consistent golf, and I think I can improve my putting as well and continue to work on shots around the green. I think golf's one of those games where there's always stuff to work on, and that's what keeps it interesting.
You talk about what Scottie Scheffler did in 2024. He won 7 times on the PGA Tour. He won 4 signature events. He won the Players, the Masters, and the Tour Championship. And if you think about that, those are elite golf courses against elite competition. So he obviously really stepped it up in 2024. What will he do in 2025? We shall see. Rory McIlroy also met with the media yesterday, and he was asked by reporters, what distinguishes Scottie from everyone else on the PGA Tour?
This is Tiger. This is in the history of golf. I don't think I've ever seen a golfer play as many bogey-free rounds as Scottie. He just doesn't make mistakes. It's so impressive. He plays the right shot at the right time over and over and over again. You obviously need the technical ability to be able to do that. But he doesn't make mistakes. And when you don't make mistakes in the golf course, the game can become pretty easy. So super impressive. And if he continues to do that, you know, he's going to be the dominant force that he was last year and the year before that.
And let's talk about the last 2 years for Scottie Scheffler. In 2023, he was the PGA Tour Player of the Year. He led the PGA Tour statistically in 14 categories. In 2024, he elevated himself even more. He led the PGA Tour in 25 statistical categories and improved his putting dramatically, going from 162nd on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting to 77. So you heard Scottie talk about he wants to get even better in 2025. And that could be very, very scary for the competition. Guys?
Can you imagine that? Scottie Scheffler needs to get mentally tougher and tougher than he was in 2024. A scary thought indeed. Great reporting from Todd Lewis. Much more on Scottie later in the show. What do you think? Both Rory with the praise saying not Tiger, not anyone, makes fewer mistakes. And then Scottie saying, yeah, I want to get a little bit mentally tougher in 2025. Wow.
Well, the thing that struck me was Scottie saying you can always play more consistent golf. Scottie Scheffler made 21 starts last year on the PGA Tour, and he was in the top 10 in 18 of those starts. I'm not sure you can get much more consistent than that. But it was also interesting listening to Rory's analysis there, because he's essentially saying it's in Scottie's hands if he's as dominant this year as he was last year. If he continues to play kind of mistake-free golf, then who's out there to touch him? Well, no one was out there to touch him really last year. Clearly, Xander made a statement in two of the biggest events of the year. But on the week-to-week grind of the PGA Tour, Scottie Scheffler was miles ahead of anyone else. And Rory basically saying there's every possibility that we're in for the same in 2025.
Does that surprise you a little bit? I mean, this isn't like the 50th ranked player in the world or the 100th ranked player in the world. This is a 4-time major champ who has been number one, giving that kind of praise. And we appreciate Rory for his honesty, but is he ceding a little bit too much ground, I guess?
No, because I don't think he's not saying that he's not up for the challenge.
Okay.
He's acknowledging excellence, and There is no argument to be made against Scottie Scheffler.
The numbers speak for themselves.
Either in terms of performance or in personality or anything else. The guy is an absolute bellwether player of this era right now. So I don't think Rory's saying, excuse me, that he doesn't have the game or the drive to pursue him.
Yes.
I think he's just acknowledging where that bar is or where it's likely to remain for 2025. Certainly if his round at Cypress Point is anything to go by.
Yeah, it does feel like the biggest challenge to Scottie might be himself in 2025, trying to live up to what he did in 2024. It was a wonderful Saturday finish at Torrey Pines. You may recall Harris English made it back to the winner's circle with a one-shot victory at the Farmers Insurance Open. There he is, the Torrey South. It was his first win since the 2021 Travelers. And it comes after a slow start to the season, which includes a missed cut at Sony and the American Express. Joins a list of winners in 2025, including Hideki, who won the opener at Kapalua with a record-breaking 35-under. Nick Taylor, who also won in Hawaii. Sepp Straka won for the third time in his career at the American Express. Like Harris, he's a Georgia Bulldog. And Harris joins us now from Pebble. Always great to spend time with you. Listen, congrats on the win. I was struck by something you said afterwards. You said the difference between winning on Saturday and losing at Torrey in 2015 was your outlook. What did you mean?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on this morning. I mean, I was, 24, 25 years old back in 2015, and losing that playoff, I feel like I putted unbelievable that round and kind of drove it like I did this past week on the final round. And I kind of looked back at that week and like, well, if I would have hit more fairways, I could have given myself more chances and I would have probably won the golf tournament. But I knew this past Saturday going into the round was going to be really difficult. The winds were high. Obviously, Torrey South is one of the toughest golf courses we play all year. And after that round, I'm like, I didn't drive it as good as I wanted to or as good as I did the first few days. But I kept putting myself in position, and I kind of used my wisdom of being on that golf course for a long time and my wisdom for being out here for 14 years on the PGA Tour and kept myself in it, kept leaving it short of the hole, left myself pretty easy up and downs and kind of leaned on my putter, which I feel like is the backbone of my game.
Harris, your coach, Justin Parsons, was with us a couple of days ago, and he said that he told you leaving the desert that he didn't want to see you play golf swing, that he wanted to see you out there shaping shots, being creative, and actually playing golf, not being technical. Was that in your mind at all through the final stretch of holes at Torrey Pines?
It was. I've never been the greatest of working on stuff on the range and then switching a gear and playing golf on the golf course and not thinking about swing. So after the desert, I felt like I actually played really well in the desert. Could have shot 6-7 under par that last round at the stadium, so I felt like I had some good momentum going into Torrey Pines. The last round, the last nine holes, I mean, even if I hit it in the rough, I didn't really care. I still had a really good game plan. If I hit it in the fairway, I was going to be aggressive and trying to make birdie. But if I hit it in the rough, I was going to leave myself in a good spot to get it up and down. And that's, for being there a lot of years, I kind of know where to leave it and where to be. And I didn't beat myself the whole day.
Harris, your coach Justin Parsons told me a couple years ago that he wanted you stalking the golf course, prowling, walking like a big cat, chewing on that Wrigley's like Pat Riley. And that's what you look like now when you're on the greens. I mean, you're a nice guy, but you're looking kind of dangerous. How much is that a part of your mental makeup now that when you're on the golf course, you're about taking care of business?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very competitive person. I mean, that's why I play this game. I love being in the moment. I love being in the heat, being in the front around with the chance to win. And I felt like I belong. I mean, early in my years, playing with a lot of the best players on the PGA Tour, sometimes it's easy to get overwhelmed and a little bit scared of some of those bigger names. But I feel like at this point in my career, I know I belong. I feel like I belong, and I got to act like it on the course. And I had a goal in mind. I had a great game plan, and I was going to stick to it and not let anything affect me. And if somebody beat me, they beat me, but I wasn't going to beat myself.
And there were two topics of conversation came out of Sunday. One was the way you managed to win and hold on under pressure, and the other one was the pace of play. How much did the pace of play bother you on Sunday, and do you think it's a problem in general out on tour?
Yeah, I saw some comments about that. I didn't know if it was the final group in general. But actually, a weird thing happened right before the final tee time is we're sitting on the tee ready to get going at 11:11 was our tee time. And one of the rules officials came up and said, hey, we got to push your tee time back 2 minutes and didn't really give us a reason. So I'd never really seen that before on the PGA Tour. I guess they were kind of pacing it out that they were having a backup on number three. And sure enough, we get to the par three, number three, and we're waiting on the group ahead of us to hit. It's just one of those holes. It's a really hard hole. It's only playing 135 yards, but you have wind gusting in your face 25, 30 miles an hour. And it's just one of those holes where if you make a mistake, you can make a double or a triple in a heartbeat. But you're going to get that at tour. You play threesomes, you play off both tees, thick rough, one of the longest golf courses we play all year, long walks from tee to green. It just happens. I didn't let it affect me. I was kind of staying in my zone, staying in my lane, and whatever you're kind of dealt with, you got to play with. But it's just hard. I mean, you're going to get that on a really hard golf course under those conditions and circumstances.
Your colleague Justin Thomas sent a pretty interesting memo to his peers about, you know, better fan interaction, better relationships with broadcast partners. He cited sports documentaries and college football games and pre-interviews with coaches. What can you guys do to grow the tent, to close that gap between yourselves and the fans and your media partners?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look, I'm a huge sports fan, so I love watching college football. I love watching the NFL. So I kind of put myself in their shoes of, like, what as a fan would I like to see from them? And I'd love to see players mic'd up on the sideline. I love hearing what goes on in the huddle, what players are saying to each other, what coaches are saying to each other. So the more we can do that in golf, the more it draws the fan in, and obviously the sponsors follow that and the TV partners. So whatever we can do to help that engagement, then I'm all for. So I was very happy with Justin's comments and memo to the players, and the more people that we can get on board, the better we all are.
You've been coming back from surgery on your hip, Paris. What was that process like? I mean, was there a low point where you started to doubt you could get back to where you find yourself now?
You always have a little doubt. I mean, it was a tough surgery. I kind of knew what I was getting into going out to Vail, Colorado at the Stegman Clinic. I stayed out there for, I think, 3 weeks working with their physical therapy team and making sure I did everything right, because I knew I didn't want to mess that part up and have this thing redone in a few years. So I knew it was a process. I did it probably faster than I should have, but I worked really hard to get back. I didn't want to miss any more majors. I started back at the Memorial, which is probably one of the hardest golf courses we play all year. And then the next week was the U.S. Open, which I made the cut. I was pretty happy about that. But I have a good team around me that pushes me, that instills a lot of confidence in me, and I still want to play this game for a long time. So after getting back, I knew it was going to be a process, and especially getting my game back and my confidence back in my game, changing the swing a little bit to take pressure off that hip. But everything has worked out. You never know what's going to happen in this game, and you kind of keep putting the steps forward and keep going, and you see what happened. I'm not scared of putting in the work, and I know what it takes. I mean, I see a lot of these guys out here working extremely hard, and for me to be the best, I've got to put in a lot of work, and I'm just happy to be where I am today, and look forward to a good year and see if I can keep getting in the mix.
Well, it was a very impressive win at Torrey Pines. Hope you have a new pack of gum as you prowl the fairways at Pebble. Thanks for joining us, Harris.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, here's where you can watch Harris English and his peers this week, Thursday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel, Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Now, there was a time when we thought Lydia Ko would be getting ready to walk away from golf about now. But based on what she said at the LPGA Tour season opener in Orlando, there might be a lot more golf ahead for the latest LPGA Hall of Famer. We'll explain that one next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. Lydia Ko returns this week. She's defending her title at the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. Last year's win was her 20th on the LPGA Tour, and that made her just the seventh player with 20 victories before the age of 27. Pretty impressive list. Nancy Lopez, Carrie Webb, Sayre Pack, Mickey Wright, Lorena Ochoa, and Kathy Whitworth.
Wow. How about the Paris Olympics? You remember, Eamon? She competed as a member of New Zealand's women's golf team, shot 71 in the final round to hold off Esther Henselite for gold. It gave her all three medals. By the way, the win also gave her the 27th and final point she needed to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame. And then at the AIG Women's Open, shot 69 in the final round at St. Andrews, the old course, to finish at 7-under to beat Ronan Yin, Nelly Korda, Lilia Vu, and G.A. Shin by two. It was her third major title and her first in 8 years. She would go on to win the Kroger Queen City Classic as well. Incredible season. With more on Lydia, we say hello to Amy Rogers in Orlando. Hey, Amy.
Hey there, guys. Well, gosh, a lot has changed in the 12 months since Lydia Ko last won here at the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. When she came into this event last year, it had been more than a year since she had won an official event on the LPGA Tour, but she ends up getting the win here on her home course at Lake Nona Golf and Country Club, and it became a springboard to just a remarkable season with those three victories and also capturing Olympic gold in Paris. And when I had a chance to speak with Lydia Ko here yesterday, I asked her how her success last season will shape her approach this season and with her career going forward.
I think, obviously it was a very special year in 2024, but I think the biggest thing that I took away from it wasn't the gold or, you know, winning my first major in over 8 years, but more the belief that I know that I can kind of overcome anything now. I went to some lulls in my career where I wasn't sure if I was ever going to win again, nor play some decent golf. So to go from that kind of a mindset to, winning this first tournament back and winning probably the biggest event that was kind of highlighted for my schedule last year of the Olympics, and then again winning a couple weeks later at the British. It was literally a fairy tale of a year, but I think I just have more belief and just stronger as a golfer, and I think that is so important to take, for this season too, because we're all going to have our own ups and downs, but to not get too down on myself and just trust my team and, kind of continue doing the work that I've been doing on and fleshing out some of, my tendencies is, I think, a better mindset to be at rather than worrying, is it ever going to happen again?
You heard Ko mention there some of those tendencies. She has been working on her swing with Holton Freeman. The two have been working together after Ko had previously been working with Siwoo Lee in Korea. They were sending videos back and forth to kind of troubleshoot her swing. But with her work with Holton Freeman, she talks about just minimizing some of those tendencies that she tends to pick up. She said, especially during the off season, they tend to sort of creep up as she begins a new year. And they're just trying to maintain that nice little fade that she likes to play. Now, while she won't be working with Siwoo Lee as often, with Holton Freeman just being about an hour and a half up the road here, she did tell me that they are going to reconnect when she returns to play in Singapore in February. Guys.
Thank you, Amy. Lydia, one of the big names to watch this week. Here's how you can watch coverage of the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions Thursday, 11:30 a.m. on Golf Channel, Friday the same time, Saturday over on NBC at 3 p.m. and then Sunday, the final round, 2 p.m. on NBC, and also streaming on Peacock.
Well, on the other side of this break, Rory McIlroy is making his PGA Tour debut this season, and that's at Pebble Beach. He had some interesting comments on golfers as entertainers. You're going to want to hear what he had to say. That's coming up next.
Me too.
Welcome back to Golf Today. This guy's making his season debut at Pebble Beach, Rory McIlroy. Just his third start on the Monterey Peninsula. On Tuesday, Rory McIlroy met with the media. He spoke about a variety of subjects. Let's take a listen.
there's been a lot of discussion about golf as an entertainment product over the last couple of weeks, and I guess I'm just wondering what you feel your responsibility is as a like engager with the media and also an entertainer.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think, look, we've seen like YouTube golf, for example, explode over the last couple of years. And, you know, people will say that that's more entertaining than maybe some of the competitive golf that's out there, but, and more relatable because you're watching guys that maybe are, you know, have a similar ability to what, the general public have. Yeah, look, it's a balance. You know, when we're growing up dreaming of becoming professional golfers and trying to get the best out of ourselves, the last thing on our mind is being an entertainer. We're competitive people at the end of the day. We want to play against the best players in the world, and we want to try to come out on top. So I think that in itself should be entertaining to people. But I think in this day and age, you know, it's become a hobby to bash golf and where golf is and is it entertaining, is it not entertaining. You know, I came out on the wrong side of it last year, but I'd say that the last round of the US Open was pretty entertaining last year, and that was just pure competitive golf. So I think the more we can get to scenarios like that, the better.
TGL, LIV, YouTube influencers, it's all supposed to be additive to the golf ecosystem. Is there any sort of risk that because people's attentions are being divided by all of these sort of golf adjacent things, that the core product, the PGA Tour product, could actually be diminished in a way?
I think it already has been. You know, I think it already has been diminished. I would say, yeah, look, the one thing about, like, TGL is only going to last 2 months. So, you know, you get this sort of big burst of it in January, February, into a little bit of March, and then it's done. So, you know, it's gone for 10 months, basically. So I'd say that is hopefully somewhat additive to the ecosystem. YouTube is like, you know, golf entertainment adjacent and whatever. And it's, you know, those guys they're killing it. They've found a niche, and it's really cool. And it serves a purpose for a lot of people. But like, I would much rather sit down and watch real golfers play real tournaments. And that's just my opinion. That to me is more entertaining. So, but I understand that other people want something different, and that's totally fine as well. So I think there's space for all of this. But yeah, I can see when the golf consumer might get a little fatigued of everything that's sort of available to them. So to scale it back a little bit and maybe have a little more scarcity in some of the stuff that we do, like the NFL, I think, you know, mightn't be a bad thing.
Scarcity in terms of the PGA Tour product?
Yeah. I think, you know, 47 or 50 tournaments a year is definitely too many.
Well, joining us to discuss this subject is Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner, who's out there at Pebble Beach. Ryan, is there a feeling that Rory's clearly expressed, do you agree with it, that golf has gone a little bit too far in believing this narrative that it should have a self-esteem problem and that it's actually in danger of somehow diluting the core product of competitive golf at the elite level?
Yeah, I certainly think it's a nuanced discussion that Rory tried to illuminate there, where you have all of these other elements and things that are being brought that are golf adjacent when they're actually sort of chipping away at what are changing media habits for golf fans or shorter attention spans for people of this generation. And so there's definitely a tendency, it seems like, to want to change and evolve the PGA Tour to meet those changing habits, but you're doing so at the risk of the competition that really this tour was founded on. And later in that interview that we didn't have in that clip, it was Rory saying, look, to me, the pinnacle of golf in 2024 last year was the final round of the US Open between the duel between he and Bryson DeChambeau. That was two megastars on an iconic and difficult venue with a massive prize at the end, which you had the best viewership of the entire year. The core product of the PGA Tour is buttoned down and nailed down to the competition element. And the more the PGA Tour tries to sort of stray from that and get into some of these more entertainment aspects, I think it's certainly a risk that it could lose itself. So it finds, the PGA Tour does, at a crossroads, I think, at this moment.
You know, Lav, when the Boston Celtics were struggling post-1980s, the coach Rick Pitino said, Larry Bird isn't walking through that door. Robert Parrish isn't walking through that door. Kevin McHale isn't walking through that door. How much is this discussion simply the aftermath of that Tiger Woods is not stacking major championships and PGA Tour victories anymore, and that while everybody's trying to figure this out, maybe golf is kind of going back to what it was pre-Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I certainly think I can see that point, Damon, that it's sort of reverting to the norm, and it's sort of a superstar by committee now as opposed to a dominant player, a force of nature, a sports phenomenon who sort of even transcends golf. And so, yeah, I can see that. I think you also have an element now, at least over the past couple of years, where Scottie Scheffler has established himself as the clear prohibitive number one player who's winning 8 times worldwide in 2024. He needs help. He needs other players to assert themselves, to win 3 or 4 other times. Yes, you had Xander Schauffele win 2 major championships in 2024, but you need a Jordan Spieth. You need Rory McIlroy to pick off another major championship. You need Ludvig Åberg to become sort of a household name. Most of these players did not win in 2024. And so I think this year, the potential that you have with the signature events, the major championship venues, if other players can either reassert their prior dominance or sort of establish themselves as new household names, I think that's where the PGA Tour can sort of fortify its fan base and sort of grow that way, as opposed to simply relying on a Tiger or a Scottie, who clearly doesn't have the mass appeal that a Tiger did in his prime.
Does it go beyond just the superstar element, though, Ryan? Because the tour is now for-profit, and the for-profit element came in with private equity investors who aren't actually golfers as individuals, and certainly not as an institution. They're not rooted in the game. Is there a sense that there's some kind of reckoning going on in terms of the business model for golf and the idea that it can sort of cross-pollinate with what works in other sports, but which may not actually appeal all that much to core golf fans?
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that now with sort of the discussion about should a shot clock be implemented in golf. We've seen it work quite successfully in Major League Baseball when it was instituted in 2023. They shaved about 30 minutes of game time off. Could that work on the PGA Tour? Maybe. It's been tried on the European Tour somewhat successfully. I still think there's elements of that probably don't work, but anytime you're talking about pace of play or being more accessible to broadcast partners, Rory mentioned in his press conference yesterday sort of the scarcity of the schedule, making fans miss the sport, sort of winnowing it down so it's maybe not competing against football or really being highlighted during certain parts of the calendar. I think those are all discussions that are worth having, but those are very difficult business decisions. You're essentially asking the PGA Tour to remove tournaments from its schedule, to turn down millions of dollars in sponsorship money, to eliminate playing opportunities for the membership. That's going to be a very hard sell unless there is a sufficient business reason to do so. But now, as you mentioned, they have a different financial backer who's more interested in turning this for profit now.
But on that pace of play subject, you have a broadcast partner in CBS's Dottie Pepper on the air saying this is a lack of respect to broadcast partners, fellow players, viewers at home. Was that a turning point moment in your mind, or will we be sitting here old and gray 5-10 years from now talking about the same old thing?
I hope so, but we've also been talking about this for eons, seemingly. It's always an issue this time of year. You have less daylight, so the tee time spread is more condensed. You have big fields trying to get playing opportunities for the membership. It's you have difficult playing conditions like you had at Torrey Pines, where it just slows down. We're not going to be talking about this in later in the spring and later in the summer when there's more daylight. And they're off in twosomes. We're probably maybe talking about it less in 2026 when you have the smaller field sizes, which should sort of alleviate some of the traffic jams that you have. I hear what Dottie is saying, and I think it's a frustration for a lot of golf fans at home. But keep in mind, these sorts of ideas have to bubble up from the PGA Tour membership, either with the pack or the board. And if you ask any player walking down this range, is pace of play slow on the PGA Tour? Sure. Are they incentivized to want to change it? Not really. You're competing for $20 million on some of the most difficult venues you can possibly face, with life-changing stakes each and every time they tee it up. And so there's not a whole lot of incentive, a whole lot of motivation to speed things up. As long as they continue to hit the broadcast window, I think they're going to be perfectly fine with it.
No doubt a complex issue to solve. Laugh, stay warm, keep that jacket on. Sounds like you're going to need it. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, folks, coming up, maybe we'll ask Marty Fish about shot clocks, serve clocks. He's down in Orlando competing on the LPGA season debut. The American former number one, silver medalist in the Olympics as well, joins us after the break. Back on Golf Today, Marty Fish, friend of the show, great tennis career, won silver in Athens in 2004, won six tournaments on the ATP, reached the finals in four Masters Series events, reached the quarters in three tennis majors, Australia, U.S. Open, and Wimbledon as well. And now, one of the top celebrity golfers that you'll find, won the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions, Celebrity Division a number of times, won the American Century in Tahoe 2024 by 4 points, even given a sponsor exemption to play in the 2022 3M Open on the PGA Tour. And Marty Fish joins us now from Orlando. Great to spend some time with you, pal. As you're the dominant player in the celebrity golf circuit, how are you staying in shape now that you're not digging forehands and backhands out of corners anymore?
Well, I don't do that much anymore. So that is not the issue, not playing tennis. The issue is kids, a couple kids at home, a couple young kids. You know, I'm watching this TGL thing, too. I really like the shot clock. I think golf just takes too long, just in general. And so I don't play a ton because it takes forever. I try and hit some balls from time to time. I belong to some really nice country clubs in Los Angeles, Bel Air Country Club and Hillcrest Country Club. Hillcrest got an amazing practice facility. So that's kind of where I can sort of try and keep my skills up, I guess. I haven't gotten any better or any worse, maybe, I guess, in the last, I don't know, maybe 20 years or so. So what you see is what you get. How I played last year is probably how I'm going to play this year, and so on.
On the subject of the shot clock in golf, Marty, tennis has the serve clock, which has kind of quickened the pace a little bit out there. Baseball also has the pitch clock. Do you think golf on the PGA Tour level could benefit from a shot clock, or is it just simply, as Rory McIlroy said yesterday, just too difficult to govern with 100-plus guys out there?
Yeah, I mean, someone smarter than me could try and figure that out, but I really liked the, and I know that that's a condensed version of, you know, they don't have to go very far, and they don't have to walk. You're looking at those events, and you're like, man, they're playing that in 90 minutes, or, you know, just around 2 hours or whatever, and it looks, you know, it looks easy and fun to kind of get it quickly going. I know it's been a subject of chat for you know, probably for a long time now, you know, underneath your breath, and now people are starting to talk about it outwardly. And I think it's kind of the one thing that it's missing to kind of this young generation. My son is 10 years old. He's a really good little golfer, but it just takes, you know, we go out and play these U.S. kids golf tournaments and stuff, and you know, a really good way to get those kids to not want to play is to, you know, have it be boring or have it be long and frustrating. And it kind of is at times. So I don't know what they can do, but they have to speed it up a little bit for the new generation coming in, for the old heads like us and like myself. I don't mind it. You know, I really enjoy going out and playing around a golf with good friends and stuff. I don't really care how long it takes, but I just can't do it every day if it's going to take 5 hours. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And speaking of TGL, Justin Thomas sent a memo to his fellow players saying we need to have better access and relationships with broadcast partners, get closer to the fans. Is that something you guys talked about in tennis, you and Andy Roddick and James Blake? Was that ever an issue? How do you make tennis more popular? You understand where Justin Thomas is coming from?
Yeah, I mean, look, we were lucky when I played. that we had Roger and Rafa and Novak and Andy Murray and Andy Roddick, these guys to sort of be the headliners and sort of dominate the game. We kind of, we had sort of two or three Tiger Woodses at the same time. With our, you know, with obviously Roger's been, you know, was one of the most well-liked athletes of all time, maybe the most well-liked athlete. You know, Nadal had such an amazing fan base. The Djokovic does as well. You know, and we've been lucky. They've had Tiger Woods and Tiger Woods. And so he, when he, you know, they need a new young sort of stud on that side to get the, you know, to get to keep it going. Tennis needs that as well. I mean, we've got Alcaraz and Sinner who are kind of winning a lot of the majors as well as Novak. And, you know, they're the young players coming up and we'll see what they, you know, what they can do in terms of slams and things like that. I know I put out, Eamon, you were all over me about who's the best player never to win a major now that Zverev lost in his third final, saying Tim Henman. I don't know about Tim Henman, but we need to up your tennis knowledge a little bit. But I love Henners, but no, it's not him. But I enjoy those podcasts. I listen to that stuff all the time. I mean, I'm, you know, in my young 40s, early 40s, and still fairly young, I feel like. And so, yeah, I mean, it's sort of turned to, you know, sort of social media, podcasting, things like that, influencers to kind of grow the game. And JT's a smart kid. I mean, he's right about a lot of that stuff. He loves the game, loves the sport, wants to see it succeed, obviously. And so, yeah, I'd listen to him.
Marty, we have a signature event going on out this week in Pebble Beach. And there has been some grumblings in golf that that's too closed off or it's anti-competitive. And in tennis, you almost have the same system with the Masters 1000 events. Do you see those kind of events as being too closed off, or is that something that's aspirational that actually drives competitors forward?
I think it drives people, I think it drives players to get into those events. A lot of those events, at least they used to be, they've added some of some more players to the field, some of the field. So it used to kind of be, you had to be sort of in the top 45 in the world to get straight into those events. Some of them, you know, the Cincinnati's and the Madrid's and the Rome's, those tournaments were, you know, early 40s. You'd have to be ranked in the world just to get into that thing. If you were 45 in the world, you wouldn't make it. And so I think it's aspirational to make those. There's tons of tournaments going on. We have more events than I think we need. There's a lot of weeks on the calendar where there's three tournaments at a time on the ATP Tour. So, you know, it'd be like Pebble going on and then the Barracuda going on and then a Dominican Republic tournament going on, like all at the same time. And I think golf does a really good job of like, this is the tour, this is the schedule, you get to play, pick your schedule, play your schedule, whatever. I know the top 70, I think it's top 70, right, in the signature events. I think it's aspirational. I mean, I think the world rankings in golf are a bit of a mess, obviously. And so I'm not sure you should necessarily go on that, but I guess that's what they, you know, what they have to go on now. But yeah, they got to, you know, I mean, golf, there's so many, you know, there's so many. I know you're anti-Liv, Eamon, and you know, there's so many things that they have to figure out to get those guys together, because we miss it. I'm a golf fan. I watch PGA Tour live on Thursday morning when I wake up. I do a DraftKings thing. I do a sort of a betting thing or whatever with my friends every week. So I watch and follow a lot. I know the names on the leaderboard at Torrey Pines this past week, but if I turn it on to a casual golf fan, they may not necessarily know those names, and so they may just change the channel. I think the signature events do a great job of, obviously, the cream rises to the top usually in those big tournaments, especially Pebble. It's such a great golf course, such a big golf course, and you see guys like Justin Rose, who's like, you know, these guys play well at big events. And so it's fun, you know, that's fun as well. So I am a huge golf fan, period. Like, again, I watch all of it. PGA Tour Live every morning. Shout out Lisa Cornwell. She did a great job this past week. And I enjoyed listening to her. And, yeah, so I, you know, look, I don't know what the answer is in terms of how to, you know, kind of get them together or whatever, but we miss it. I miss it. I'm a huge golf fan. I miss watching all those guys together.
Well, there's no question you're the best player on the LPGA Tour. That's Nelly Korda. You obviously familiar with Peter Korda, Jessica Korda, the big sis, Sebastian Korda, little brother. What impressed you the most about this phenomenal athletic family?
It's pretty incredible, isn't it? What impresses me the most? I mean, the fact that they picked like two of the toughest sports, maybe tennis and golf, I think. As Brian Urlacher's to my left, football is not nearly as tough as tennis or golf. So just so he knows that I heard that, or that he heard that. Sebi is an incredible, you know, he's a top 20 tennis player on the men's side. And is at the, you know, is at the least of his career that he could possibly do, right? I mean, he's a major champion in the future, in my opinion. You know, Jess, we haven't seen Jess out here for a while. Obviously, she had her baby, and I saw yesterday she was practicing up, and I think she said something like, bring your kid to work day, and she's hitting balls, so it's good to see. And then obviously Nelly is awesome, and you know, it's such a great family. They're such good people. I was a Davis Cup captain for a little bit, and so Sebastian was one of my players, and I got to talk to Peter about a lot of things, golf, tennis, everything, about Sebastian's career and stuff. And it's a great family, and they're awesome people, so it's easy to root for their success for sure.
Marty, you were always very open in writing about the role anxiety had played when you were at the peak of your career. Does that ever manifest itself in golf now that you have certain expectations that you're such a dominant figure on the celebrity golf circuit?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's far less stressful than playing, you know, than sort of playing for your livelihood, playing for, you know, something that you've spent your entire career, your entire life really preparing for and training for and practicing for. On the other hand, it's pretty nerve-wracking because we're not, you know, we're here because of another sport or another, you know, something else that we do. So it's always nerve-wracking kind of on the, you know, first tee or whatever. Golf was an outlet for me when it was happening in tennis. It was a place that I could get away with friends, you know, kind of get out there and forget about life for a few hours and just, you know, have fun, be with people. Golf for me is, has really changed my life in a ton of great ways. A lot of the relationships that I've created and made or created, just made, you know, made friendships that I've made out here, obviously are all golf. Some of these guys that Brian Urlacher is just standing here waiting to be interviewed by you guys too. He I would never cross paths with Brian. He's an awesome dude, and we have a great relationship. Like golf, for me, you can grab someone for 4 hours or however long we've been talking about, 5 hours sometimes, and just hang with them and be with them and interact, and you can learn a lot about somebody in that amount of time and create, you know, awesome relationships. So golf has been nothing but a blessing for me, especially during the really tough times in tennis.
Well, Marty, so great to spend some time with you. We'll have to continue the conversation. Best player without a slam, maybe over a beer or a round of golf in the future. Thanks so much for your time. Have fun in Orlando, pal.
Love it. Okay, guys, Rios is my guess, by the way. Rios is the best player to never win a major, even not Tim Henman.
Chum on the water, pal. Chum on the water. Scottie Scheffler is back in action and eager to prove that a kitchen mishap will be about as effective as stopping him and as a Louisville cop was. We'll hear from the world number one as he gets ready for his season debut at Pebble Beach as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
The world number one out on the range at Lake Nona. 75th season of the LPGA Tour gets underway tomorrow in Orlando, and Nelly Korda with 7 titles to defend this year, including a major championship.
What a gift it is to have Nelly back. Orlando, Florida. She's a native of the state. What a year she had last year. Met Gala included. I mean, she is transcending the sport.
That she is. Welcome back in to Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. A big week in golf. The two number ones. We're seeing them both in action. for the first time in 2025.
I think it's the best week that professional golf has seen in quite some time. You got Nelly on one coast, and then world number one Scottie Scheffler makes his season debut this week as 2024, of course, highlighted by 7 PGA Tour wins. He won the FedEx Cup, gold medal in Paris. A big topic in the game of late, though, has been player access to media. And following Justin Thomas's recent memo, here's what the world number one had to say about that.
The reason why I always watch sports is to see the competition. And like when I think about the football games this weekend, I was so excited to watch great competition, great teams going against each other. And so when I think about something that would be good for the game of golf, I think the more we can get back into the competition of things, I think that's what's best. And when you have great players going at it, I think that's what's interesting about sports. Like people want to see, people tune into Tiger because he's a great player. And Tiger, his golf clubs always did his talking for him. He wasn't going out and trying to do anything extra or try and put on a show. He was going out there to compete and play golf. And it was electric at times because he would kind of go nuts when things would go well. But he also was really, really good at going crazy and getting right back into a different state of mind like that. And that's something that I try not to get too amped or too calm down because, you know, I try to stay as even keel. Tiger was like a crazy person when it went. Like you'd see him go nuts, and then he'd get his ball out of the hole, and it was like, psh, like that. And so, I try to not turn down many media requests. I always come in, do press conference each week. I very rarely will ever turn down interviews after the round. I think being open and honest when you're answering questions is always a good thing. I try to be as honest as possible, but there are certain aspects of my life that I like to keep private. You know, I never strive to be an entertainer. I always loved playing golf. And, you know, this is what I love to do is come out here and compete. And if people want to watch and enjoy, then, you know, come on out and have a good time. But I'm not going to put on a show or do anything crazy to try to get more people to watch me. You know, I'm just trying to come out here and do my thing. But I think Justin did bring up some good points about being open to doing a bit more stuff. But at the end of the day, I think what people like is competition. And I think the more we can stop talking about all the other BS that's going on in the game of golf, the more we can get back into, I mean, we're playing Pebble Beach this week. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of the media, a lot of the talking points in here about pace of play and TGL and all this other stuff. And we're playing Pebble Beach this week. It's one of the most beautiful, iconic golf courses in the world. And we got some of the best players in the world here competing. Like, let's soak that in.
Ooh-wee, I tell you, in our TikTok, Instagram, influencer world, microwave ovens, people want to be entertained, and they want to be entertained quickly. Scottie seems to be saying, isn't great golf enough?
It certainly is from him, and I don't think anyone can suggest that Scottie Scheffler hasn't provided his pound of entertainment to fans over the last couple of years in this game. And I think that's fair enough. Everyone's going to free up the bandwidth that they can for this. And I don't think it's intrusive in terms of what Justin Thomas is suggesting. It's explanatory of the process of these guys rather than detrimental to that process, I think is the point that Justin Thomas is getting at. And some people will embrace that, some won't. I don't really think anyone's going to expect or ask Scottie Scheffler to be a more performative personality than he is. And, you know, we heard Rory McIlroy make a similar point earlier in the show about how much there is in terms of golf content that is adjacent to the PGA Tour. I don't necessarily buy Rory's argument that it sort of diminishes the tour's product. Perhaps it dilutes it a little bit. There is a lot of golf content out there. There's a lot of golf entertainment content out there. And if you are into golf content as entertainment, you are not underserved in the game right now. The problem in this game right now is that it is overrun with grifters, telling people that this game ought to have low self-esteem and that they are the solution to that low self-esteem.
But what about the numbers that people are playing, but they're not watching as much? You know, the influencers aside and TGL aside, traditional 18-hole, 72-hole, four-day golf tournaments that in the height of the Tiger Woods era, listen, non-golf people watch Tiger. I disagree a little bit with what Scottie had to say, that it was the golf for sure, first and foremost, but it was the red shirt also. It was the possibility of a fist pump and a hole out and a 12-shot win. It was just the possibility of those things. And I wonder if the golfers, if they're not comfortable, not everybody's going to be Deion Sanders, who's great at his job and also high-stepping into the end zone. But for the traditional way that we consume golf, if it is a pre-round interview, if it is a mid-round interview, there has to be something a little bit more, or I think those numbers are going to continue to be going in the wrong direction. Something has to change. Even if it's 100 guys doing minimally more, maybe that adds up to something greater than it is now.
Well, I think all of that will add to the context, but add to the context of what? You still need great golf. You still need great players going head-to-head against each other on great golf courses. I think that's really what the core golf fan is looking for. And because this game is divided, that's a problem right now. You are not, and even before LIV existed, you didn't see the best in the world go up against each other head-to-head as often as we'd like to see. Perhaps the signature events in time is going to give us that. But we see too much of the kind of run-of-the-mill journeyman players on run-of-the-mill journeyman courses. And maybe that speaks to what Rory McIlroy said in terms of a saturation point with too many tournaments. And some of this idea of access, a lot of it is the review that the game is kind of now under with new ownership, and that there is a for-profit private equity element that is going to interrogate what's best for the business of golf. And maybe that is actually asking the players to assume a little bit more of a responsibility, that they're not there to get paid purely for playing great golf anymore, that they do have an obligation to grow the business as equity owners in this business. I don't think that's a big imposition on the fans, but nor do I see anyone being held at gunpoint here to do something that they're not comfortable doing either personally or professionally.
Well, a lot of people are thinking about what is best for the game, but finding a consensus may be very difficult to find. Well, from California to Florida we go. 75th season on the LPGA Tour kicks off this week. Hilton Grand Vacations, Tournament of Champions, Lake Nona Golf and Country Club. You know it well. Beautiful spot in Orlando, features tournament winners from the last couple of years and a celebrity component at Lake Nona as well. Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols, always on the pulse of the women's game, joins us now. It's great to see you. Now listen, Amy Rogers just talked to Lydia Ko. I'm curious what you think is motivating Lydia Ko to continue pursuing this great game.
Well, I love the fact, first of all, that she said she's not going to half do anything. And I think that really shows you a lot about the mind of a champion here, you know, that if she's going to be out here and she's going to keep going at this, because right now there's so much great golf left in the tank, obviously, that she's going to do it the way she's always done it. And that's full throttle and with a lot of great thought. So, you know, but I think there's another carrot out there that she's chasing, that she's put on the table in the career Grand Slam. And that's a big one. And then there's a smaller one that's exciting in the International Crown, and that she's now eligible to potentially qualify for that.
What is the Grand Slam, though? Is it four majors? Is it five majors? I imagine a lot of the golf fans are a bit confused.
You know, I actually regret that I didn't ask her that question myself yesterday. You know, does she think that she needs to win two more in order to get the career Grand Slam? Because obviously the LPGA has five majors now. Lydia's won three different ones. She's still missing the U.S. Women's Open and the KPMG Women's PGA. There are seven players that the LPGA considers having won the career Grand Slam, and those are, you know, some heady names when you look at Annika Sorenstam and Corey Webb and Louise Suggs and Mickey Wright. It's a wonderful list. But the tour said itself, you know, essentially we didn't add a fifth major to make it more difficult for players to achieve the career Grand Slam. We wanted to give our players another opportunity to play. So they feel like if you win four different ones that you've achieved it, such as MB Park did in 2015. But it is unusual, because when you have five majors, you know, the dictionary definition is that you run the table. You win everything that's on offer. But the LPGA's history with major championships varies everywhere from two majors a year to five. So when you look at the overall history, you can see why it's up for debate.
Beth Ann, we are accustomed to seeing athletes make comebacks after retirement, but I don't think we've ever seen a gap so short between a retirement and a comeback as we're about to see next week on the LPGA Tour, because two players that we celebrated saying goodbye just a few weeks ago, it seems, are back again.
Yeah, we just gave out the flowers, right? So Lexi Thompson and Brittany Lincecum, two Florida natives, will be playing in the Founders Cup next week. Brittany will be playing on a sponsor's exemption. Obviously, Lexi played well enough to get in on her own merit on the CME points race. But, you know, on the one hand, you say, oh, my goodness, this just happened in, you know, November and December that we, you know, we had these great send-offs for these two players who both said they were still going to play in 2025, but neither one of them said exactly how many tournaments. And then here we are already, you know, in February, we'll see them play again. But on the other hand, you know, it's an easy commute for both of them. Great grass for them to compete on. And I have a feeling that we will probably be seeing both of them as past champions at the Chevron in April. And so it's understandable that they would want to get a few competitive rounds, you know, under their belts. Brittany has definitely indicated that she will play, and I'm just assuming on the part of Lexi Thompson. But yeah, it is extremely unusual. And I'm really curious to see when we get to the end of this year how many times we've actually seen Lexi tee it up in 2025.
Hard to say goodbye to the LPGA. It was hard to say goodbye to Shawshank Prison, you don't remember? Brooks was institutionalized. Great to see you, Beth Dan. Enjoy the week in Orlando.
Thank you.
All right, as Maurice Allen, the long driver, warms up behind Beth Dan. Speaking of big guys, how about this big guy? Born to the gridiron, Bears legend and Pro Football Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher teeing it up this week. He joins us on the other side of the break. Back on golf today, Brian Urlacher spent his entire 13-year career with the Bears, selected ninth overall in the 2000 draft, eight-time Pro Bowl selection, and in 182 career games, he started all but two, ranking third in franchise history. He was voted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility in 2018. And how great to have Chicago Bears legend Brian Urlacher with us. Hey, big man, for a long time, people said if you had muscles, big biceps, broad shoulders, lifted weights, you couldn't play golf. Has your size been an imposition at all to you pursuing the kind of golf you want to play?
Well, the kind of golf I want to play compared to what I can play are two different things. But, it is hard for me to turn. I feel like the bigger guys, maybe not as hard as an O lineman or a D lineman, but I do have a hard time turning, but could be just because I'm stiff. But I love the game. You know, I try to work on my flexibility so I could turn more, but I don't care. I love the game. It's so much fun. It challenges me every day, and I just love playing.
Brian, you've said in the past that first tee nerves don't bother you in a pro-am, or the idea of kind of noise doesn't bother you, that what bothers you is actually silence or quiet. Why are you so comfortable on the first tee of a pro-am when a lot of people who don't play for a living start to worry that they're actually going to hit someone?
Yeah, I wouldn't say comfortable, and the people are still in danger when I'm on the first tee for sure, or any tee box for that matter. I just, at home, we listen to music when we play. We play sixsomes, so it's never really quiet when you're a teen. Now people are in the background talking. So when it gets quiet, that's when I'm like, okay, a noise going to go off in my backswing. That's when I kind of get a little nervous. But I do like a little bit of riffraff, a little bit of noise in the background, just to kind of break it up a little bit from being so serious.
On that note, Brian, football is such a violent, adrenaline-fueled game. What was the process of leaving that behind and finding other things to even come close to filling that hole?
It was hard, Damon. You know, it's just the competitive part. You know, you compete for, you know, from high school through college through the NFL, and all of a sudden one day when you retire, that's all gone. And the competition part, being around your teammates every day, your coaches, that was a tough void for me to fill. I feel like golf definitely jumped in there. I played in the NFL, but not as much. So golf filled the competition void for me for sure. Bike riding helped me out a little bit, trying to get the stay active. But it's hard to fill that void of being around your teammates every day. And for me, it's the competition part. That's what I missed the most when I retired. But golf has done a good job of stepping in there for me for sure.
Is it true, Brian, that you made your first ace on a par four?
I did, yeah. Number 16 at Seville, my home club there in Arizona. Actually, the women played out there last year for their one of their events. I think it was 297 that day. And the bad thing, I didn't see it go in. I saw the ball disappear, but I thought it went behind the flag because every once in a while I hit a good shot. Every once in a while I'll hit a good shot and it'll be behind the flag when you think it went in. And then we got up there and it was in the hole. So it was pretty cool. I made one more a couple years later on a par three. But and my first one on a par four was pretty cool.
What do you get out of a week like this? you know, you got celebrities, you got stars in their respective sports, actors, Nelly Korda, Lydia Ko. What brings you back every year?
It's just so fun. Number one, I love playing golf, and competition golf's different. In these events, you know, you can play your member guests, you can play at home with your friends. These events are different. You're playing against, you're actually playing competitive golf with the rules in play. You know, at home, sometimes the guys don't play by the rules all the time. So it's nice to have that in effect. But you get a chance to meet so many other people. Alongside the women, it's just amazing to watch how good they are. I'm a huge golf fan, so I watch them every week on TV when they're on Golf Channel. I watch, same way with the PGA Tour. I just love watching golf, and to see them in person. And then, like I said, to meet the other guys in other sports, and most of these guys are all at the same events. We have our two or three celebrity things we do every year. So just get a chance to hang out with them, and you make friends with them. And there's always a few new guys every year as well. So it's a blast. We look forward to this event every year. And the entertainment they have during the week this week, the concerts, is awesome as well.
What's a good week for you, Brian? Is it results-based or is it experience-based? Mm-hmm.
Well, I would like to say results, but I always come in with a goal in mind, and I never get to my goal. I want to be in the top 10 or top 15, and somehow I just have a bad day, a bad round, or a bad nine, and I just can't get there. I just want to have fun. You know, these things are a great time. I want to be competitive. You know, I don't want to embarrass myself, but I think having fun and getting to hang out with the guys and meeting the women is a fun thing as well.
Brian, my mom was born in Chicago. She's excited about the future. Can you give her any hope as a Bears fan that the worm is going to turn?
For sure. I think Ben Johnson was a great hire. I was surprised that he ended up going there. I was happy he did. Caleb Williams is a stud. I feel like he had a great year. A lot of people were down on him. I feel like he did a good job this year. Didn't have a lot of time to throw the football, but he'll get better and throw it away when he has to. I'm optimistic for where they're going. The defense is always good. So we'll see. Like I said, Ben Johnson was a great hire. I think the Bears fans have something to look forward to the next 5, 10, 15 years with Caleb at quarterback.
As we say goodbye, Chiefs or Eagles? Real quick.
Well, I'm going to go with the Chiefs. It's tough to pick against the two-time defending Super Bowl champs. They're on a roll again. They've won I don't know how many playoff games in a row. Mahomes is unbelievable. I'm a big fan of the Eagles as well, but what Mahomes has been doing, him and Coach Reed together, are pretty much unstoppable.
Brian Urlacher, finger on the pulse of the NFL and the golf world as well. Have fun with your LPGA pals this week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Back on golf today, Bachelor fans will know the name Joey Grazadeh. Starred as The Bachelor in season 28 from Pennsylvania, played tennis at Westchester University, found love, and got engaged to Kelsey Anderson on the show. And he wasn't done. Not only The Bachelor, went on to season 33 of Dancing with the Stars back in November. Quite a run he's been on. Loves golf. Also, teeing it up in this week's Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. We have Joey with us from Orlando. Now listen, you've handed out roses in front of the cameras. You've danced in front of cameras. What's your nervous level playing golf in front of cameras?
This is going to be completely different this week. I'm excited to be talking to you guys today, but I can't lie. I'm going to be nervous about hitting some golf balls in front of cameras tomorrow. So that's going to be something new and something interesting for sure.
Just how nervous are we talking here, Joey? You're surrounded by guys like Marty Fish and Brian Urlacher, who are veterans of this kind of pro celebrity format. You're pretty new to playing golf pro-ams. I mean, are these folks lining the fairways in danger tomorrow?
They might be. I honestly have no idea. I hope they're not. I have a feeling that I'm going to be able to figure it out, but the goal today is just to hit the range, try to get some consistent of a ball shape so I know that all the spectators tomorrow will be safe. But I will definitely tell anyone on the left side just to maybe back up just a little bit to be a little bit more careful tomorrow.
Well, you've been very open about your goals and dreams in life, 30 things you wanted to accomplish by age 30, ice skating in New York City, for example. What are some golfy things that you want to get done to kind of complete that list?
One of the goals is obviously I wanted to play in one of these pro-ams, so I got a chance to do the St. Jude earlier this year. I'm really excited I'm doing this one now as well. But another one is I want to go play Pebble Beach. I've seen it. I've been by it. I've never gotten a chance to play it, so going to be looking to play that in April, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
As you start to spend more time in the golf world, Joey, who's the coolest golfer that you've actually spent time with, or who's number one on your wish list of golfers that you do want to spend time with?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, everyone's number one is obviously Tiger Woods. Anytime you get a chance to talk to him, you feel very lucky. But I'm really excited just to be able to be at these events and be walking around and meet some of these women on this event here. I know that we got some great champions that'll be here. So I'm just excited to meet anyone. Obviously, the celebrities in the field, too. There's some great guys here. And it's just going to be fun to kind of go do something that I really enjoy doing and playing, and doing it at a stage like this and meeting champions at their craft is going to be really fun.
You know, Joey, this has been a tennis-heavy show. We talked to Marty Fish a little bit ago. I understand you played college tennis at Westchester. I have three boys playing tennis. They're doing the USTA thing. You know, what are the benefits long-term? Because my wife and I are hemorrhaging cash paying for lessons.
Yeah, I was actually a teaching tennis pro before I got on The Bachelor, too. So I know a lot about that hemorrhaging cash, as you say. But truthfully, it is the best sport you can get into, mainly just because it's a great way to understand how your body works from young kids all the way through their entire life. I just feel like it's one of those sports that once you play it enough, you understand how the motion works in the sport. It's a great workout. And honestly, it's just a good time to be connecting with people. But yeah, Marty knows a little bit more than I do about that. He's obviously a great golfer too, so it's going to be fun to see him out here this week.
What constitutes a good week for you by the end of this tournament, Joey? Is it based purely on the experience you're going to have, or is there still that athlete in you that wants to be results-based?
I 100%, it's hard for me not to be result-based. I'm always competitive in anything I do, so I'm going to make sure when I'm going out here, I'm going to put the best score out that I can. It's new. I've never done a Stableford format either, so I was told that a really good number to try to shoot for is 100. I got a couple other buddies that are similar handicap to me, and that's what they say they try to do every tournament. So that's my personal goal, is I'd love to be able to break 100 this week, but I know that I'm going to be feeling different nerves and different things I haven't felt before. So the goal is definitely just going to be having fun too. But if we break 100, and we have a good time, I'm going to be a really happy person at the end of this.
Well, you said fans on the left side of the fairway could be in jeopardy. Give us a scouting report, maybe things you do well and things you'd like to improve on.
Yeah, I would say right now my tee ball has been my biggest weakness. So if they do see me grabbing the big stick, they're going to have to watch out on the left side. I just have that nice big banana slice right now that I've been working on. But I think what I do best is, honestly, my three wood's probably the best club in my bag. I'm going to try to pull it out as much as possible this week and just hit that 250 ball down the middle where I can. I have some decent hands around the green. I feel like if my putting's on point, I think that's going to be a help for this week as well. So the goal is just trying to get on the green regulation, get out with some pars, and hopefully get some points.
Minimize mistakes, into trouble, out of trouble. That's the best advice I could give. Joey, great catching up. Have fun this week with the LPGA stars.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
Speaking of Joey's dream course, we're about to head back out to Pebble Beach to connect with Max Grazerman. He's coming off a terrific rookie season and is in search of his next step up. Signature event seems a good place to start. We're back on golf today. Last fall, Maverick McNealy birdied the final hole of the RSM Classic to secure his first PGA Tour win in his 142nd start. That had McNealy finish the year ranked 51st in the FedEx Cup standings. The year prior, McNealy had to step away from golf to deal with a torn ligament in his shoulder. Now, that RSM Classic finalized the top 125 in the FedEx Cup standings. Players ranked 51 through 60. In those standings, qualified for two early season signature events, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Genesis Invitational, and that's through the Aon Next 10.
It was a big week at the Farmers for Sam Stevens with a tied for second finish, while Harris English took the title by a shot. The runner-up for Sam came with some big perks coming up. Sam's recent good play means he secured the top spot in the Aon Swing 5, which means a start in this week's AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Qualifying for the next signature event, the Genesis Invitational through the Aon Swing 5, comes from the top FedEx Cup points earners from the Sony Open in Hawaii, the American Express, the Farmers Insurance Open, and the WM Phoenix Open. Another player who is trending in a positive direction, Max Grazerman. He finished 48th in the FedEx Cup standings in his first season on tour, making 19 cuts in 26 starts with three runner-up finishes. He finished tied for seventh this season at the American Express. And the Dookie, Max Grazerman, joins us now from Pebble. Great to spend some time with you. I reflect on your rookie season. Three runner-up finishes came in your last six starts of the season. What did you start to figure out about PGA Tour golf and life?
Just getting comfortable out there. There's a lot of good players, you know, week in, week out. No matter who you're playing with, there's stiff competition. And for me, I think it was just about learning under the gun with the people out there, getting comfortable in my own skin. I mean, I felt like my game was always there, just kind of developing that confidence throughout the season, working on the right things. And I think it just took me a little more time than maybe some other people. But once I got comfortable, I felt like, you know, sky was the limit and there was a lot of opportunity for me out there. And unfortunately, I didn't win, but had a couple really good finishes. And hopefully this year, coming up soon, that opportunity will come.
Max, how tough is it to stick with what got you to the tour in the first place? Because I think a lot of guys go out there and they find themselves standing next to a McIlroy or a Scheffler and think, I need to do that. And they turn into searchers and can lose the edge very quickly. Did you find that in your first year, that there is a rabbit hole if you're going to go down that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good question. I mean, there's a rabbit hole every day. You could be searching every day looking for the next best thing in your swing or something like that. I felt like for me, I tried not to do that early. There was definitely a little bit of panic for me early in the season, having been a good putter for a while and getting on the kind of those Poa West Coast greens and the ball not going in. I ended up switching some putters there, so I did kind of go down a rabbit hole a little bit, but just tried to stick to my process, went back to my original putter. And just, I think that's what makes guys so good out here, is they stick to their routine of what drills they do every day, every week, every month, and they try to get better at those process-oriented drills, and that's what makes them ultimately have success on the golf course. So I think it's definitely important to stick to what you know and just kind of incrementally improve upon that. It's super critical.
Max, speaking of searching, back when you had wrist surgery in 2022, I know you considered maybe putting the clubs away forever and getting into real estate, perhaps finance with some of your Duke pals. How close were you to saying goodbye and saying, you know, enough is enough, I'm going to find a completely different vocation?
Yeah, I mean, I was probably about as close as it gets, I would say. I went kind of into an office atmosphere and checked it out during, you know, while I had wrist surgery, and even contemplated that before I was kind of on the table and having surgery, kind of not really having the success that I thought I would and that I wanted. And but nothing comes easy in life, so I just kind of just kept pushing through and ultimately decided, it was kind of earlier on in my pro career, I decided, you know, if I didn't get on the PGA Tour at 30, I was going to go and do something else. So I hit that goal at, I think I was 28. So I got there early enough, and thankfully it's paid off. And I think that perspective, keeps me at peace, gives me a peace of mind a little bit out there on the course, knowing that there's other opportunities out there in life. And it's not just about golf. I mean, Scotty kind of talks about how golf is not his main thing, his main focus in life. And I think that's part of what makes him such a great player. At the same time, you need to be hyper focused on golf, but you know, you have family out there and other opportunities in life just outside of golf, so it's important to kind of keep that perspective.
Max, you played well at the American Express out in the desert, finishing in a tie for seventh. You also played the Sunday at Torrey Pines, and those were 2 days that got a lot of attention in terms of the pace of play, with some fan and broadcaster criticism out there. Is slow play a big issue in your mind on the tour, or is it fixable?
Yeah, I think it's a huge issue. I think that we need to take a closer look at it. I think maybe the current methods aren't the best. You look at TGL, for example, they have the shot clock, and then I've had people ask me, hey, why can't you just do exactly what TGL does and have a shot clock? The problem with that is everyone's starting at the same place in TGL with the 40 seconds, and they're starting right next to the mat. It's all essentially objective with the shot clock. If you were to implement a shot clock on tour, everybody's in a different group. Everybody is in a different place on the golf course. For example, I'll hit it further than someone else. I'll be 40 yards down the fairway. I can't get my number yet because I'm in the way. So if that first person's on the shot clock, and then you put it, when do you do the shot clock for me? So it's, it becomes a little bit subjective on the course, and then you have different officials for each group. There's only one official on TGL. So, you know, preferably there's some sort of shot clock system, but what does that look like? Currently we have, for example, we have, they call it average shot time. So you get an infraction, a warning, if you're 8 seconds or more above the average shot time of a player that week. Let's say it's 36 seconds. If I'm at 45 seconds, 9 seconds, I get an infraction, a warning. If I get 10 warnings, I get a fine. The problem with that system is that it's just whenever the marshal clicks, oh, he hit the shot or something like that, no one's taking into account how fast you're walking, where you are on the golf course. I think it's just really tough to have fast pace of play when there's this many people. But, you know, look, it's important. We can't be having 5.5 hour rounds on the golf course. We need to take a look at, do we tell people to walk faster? Anything we can do, I don't know what the answer is, but certainly we need to figure out how to play much, much faster. And I mean, it would help if we didn't play as hard of a golf course as Torrey Pines and 30 mile an hour winds. That would help too.
It is a complicated time in the game. Max, what do you think of Justin Thomas's memo to players that, hey, let's be better partners to our broadcast partners and have more continuity and outreach with the fans? You know, you want to play great golf, though, and be selfish and focus on yourself. Where do you find that fine line where you're not being outside of yourself and someone who you want to be naturally?
Yeah, it's an interesting time in golf. You have YouTube. I think a couple people have talked about how successful YouTube has been, and I think because they engage with the fan quite a bit, just directly into the camera and stuff like that with YouTube golf. What JT said is important, and I don't know what that looks like. I know we have on-course interviews and stuff like that. I'm happy to do, I think a lot of players out here are happy to do whatever is needed. So I think it's just about asking the players to get in front of the camera more. Is that on course? Is it? I mean, I think it'd be great to have on course interviews on multiple different holes. I mean, there's a lot of time to fill between the shots. I think with people's attention spans getting shorter and shorter, you need to fill that time between shots on the golf course. Because if I hit a tee shot, if I'm in the final group and I hit a tee shot, I'm going to take, you know, at least a minute to or two to get to my next shot. And so it's about filling that time in. And I think we should be doing a lot of on-course interviews. I don't think players seem to mind that. So I'm open to whatever suggestions JT and other players have to offer.
Max, it's great to spend some time with you today. I know you're in California, but that beanie and those gloves, that's going to be a pretty good warm-up for summer in Northern Ireland at the Open.
I'm absolutely freezing right now. I'm from New Jersey, but I've lived in Florida for 5 years, and this is about as cold as it gets. I'm almost shivering speaking into the microphone right now.
Well, I hope you get hot on the golf course as well this week. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
Well, before we get to break, let's take a look at the PGA Tour University ranking. The program that awards professional status to top graduating college golfers, and David Ford, UNC, still in that top spot. Golf Today is back right after this.
Back on Golf Today, reminder, coverage of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am gets underway tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Todd Lewis joins us once again from Pebble Beach. T. Lou, you were in a meeting earlier today. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I just got out of the meeting. It was held by the PGA Tour's Tyler Dennis, Chief Competitions Officer, Gary Young, Senior Vice President, Rules and Competition for the Tour, and Andy Weitz, who's the Chief Marketing and Communication Officer. They did a lot of research recently, getting some interaction with 50,000 golf fans on how to better the PGA Tour. They also did their own research. A couple things came out of that research. First off, the Tour Championship, there have been some reports about it possibly changing its format, maybe to a match play format. That could possibly go to a vote
to the PGA Tour Policy Board as soon as next month. But the big thing that fans want to better on tour is the broadcast enhancements. We're seeing some of that in-round interviews, focus on the cut line on Friday. This weekend, we're going to have pre-round interviews. You're going to hear from the leaders prior to them going off trying to win the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. But speed of play is an issue as well. The tour is trying to address this. Now, you may see the shot clock on these TGL broadcasts. They're watching that. It's interesting to them, but they feel like they have their own shot clock. It is the average stroke time. They know how long it takes a player to hit a shot on the PGA Tour, and they have talked to these players that are slow to try to help increase their speed of play. There may be a possibility of using, well, there is going to be a possibility. They will test in an event or maybe multiple events, distance measuring devices. They will use range finders at an event or two coming up beginning in March. And also the possibility of increasing transparency on the PGA Tour about these players. They may list the players that are slow and that are fast. They may make it transparent to the public about which players are being fined for slow play. So this could be a pivotal year in 2025 in making some changes on the tour in regards to basically pace of play and other things to help better the tour for its fans. Guys?
Todd Lewis reporting from Pebble Beach, fresh out of a meeting with PGA Tour executives. Fascinating what came out of that, including that the slow players may be called out.
Yeah, there's definitely things seem to be moving in the right direction. Clearly, the tour has been listening. Now the onus is on action. The change of the tour championship, I think, would be a huge positive. Enhancing the broadcast is always going to be a positive for fans. But I don't believe that talking about transparency around slow play is necessarily going to make a huge difference. I'm all for naming and shaming these players, but stroke penalties are the only thing that's going to get them moving at this point of it. We've tried everything else at this point. It doesn't actually work. You find them after 10 infractions, as Max Brazierman just told us. I just think we're finally at a point now. The players have gotten theirs over the last few years. That's what that's all been about, 4 years of what do the players get. They've seen their benefit. Finally, we seem to be moving to a point where the fans are actually going to see some benefit.
Speaking of fans, you want entertainment? We're off to Phoenix for the WM Phoenix Open.
You don't want to play snow in front
week.
Of that crowd.
Maybe we should have that every week on the PGA Tour. No, let's not get crazy.
I don't think that's all that portable.
All right, for the latest news, Golf Central with Anna Jackson is 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you next week from beautiful Scottsdale. Take care.